folks, we will call our meeting for Tuesday, December 1st to order. Roll call. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
Trustee Sampson.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Harris.
Here.
President Rafter. Here. Do I have a motion to modify or accept the agenda?
Move to approve.
Trustee Harris. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart. Any discussion? We have a motion to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Announcements. Well, we have a couple of guests tonight, guest speakers. Assistant Chief Rob Goplin and Assistant Chief Ryan Gibbons from the Green Bay Fire Department. Thank you for joining us, folks. And then under announcements, we have an item called Green Bay Hydro Helpers Program. And Assistant Chief Goplin has been kind enough to just give us a quick...
Actually, it's a program where we ask people in residential neighborhoods during the winter to have their children help us out by keeping snow clear from the hydrants. Obviously, you know, if we need to use the hydrant in the wintertime, sometimes they can be kind of hard to get to. We ask that the children kind of adopt a hydrant near their house on quiet, not busy residential streets. Take care of that hydrant all winter long. We will be checking on them just to make sure. Clear an area around them about 3 to 4 feet. And if they find any problems, it also helps that, you know, we provide them a number. They can call the water department. They'll call Alloway Water Utility and report any problems like missing caps or anything leaking from the hydrant, things like that. And then at the end, in the summertime, we offer them a certificate of completion, and then when we get back to normal, there's also an ice cream social that would be involved where we invite the kids and, you know, give them some ice cream, show them the fire trucks, and thank them for everything they've done to help us out. So we're looking forward to that, and it's a great program.
Very neat. And how are we going to get the word out on that?
Well, it's gone out on the media outlets a few times. We've got it posted to various websites, and the contact information is out there on social media as well. So making sure we get it out to everybody.
Very good. Thank you. Any other announcements from staff? Any other announcements from village board members? I was just telling some of the folks before the meeting that Chris Clark's on, right? He'll enjoy this. On Thanksgiving, we were playing pickleball at Kiwanis Park outside in the morning. There were about 12 people out playing all morning long. And then on Saturday, there were about 30 people out there playing pickleball, probably from 8 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. Just amazing. So keep those heads up. But it's something that's really being used, so that's cool. Okay, any other announcements? Hearing none, we will move on. Well, before I do that, we have someone on by the name of Sarah, and I'll ask Sarah if she would like, if she's interested in any one particular item tonight.
Nope, just here to listen.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining. Okay, we will move on to item number 4A, Green Bay Metro Fire Update from Assistant Chief Goplin and Gibbons. So you want me to you want to share your screen?
Sure. I'm going to go ahead and share it here. And I'm just going to make sure that have this displaying properly first before we move.
While Rob is getting that ready to go, the 2019 report will be resent, hopefully soon.
Okay.
so everyone should be able to see that, I hope. Is that correct?
I see it.
Okay. So essentially, we want to just give a update to you on kind of what occurred in 2019, just to kind of give a recap, you know, realizing that the annual report is a little bit behind, and we certainly apologize for that. And the only thing, I guess, that I can offer as a bit of an explanation is 2020. And it's kept us a little busy, and we'll go through some of that as well and kind of explain how things have changed for us and how we had to operate a little differently in 2020. So we will be getting the report out to you, and again, I apologize for the delay in doing that. So we'll go through some of the 2020 highlights, if you want to call them that, the statistics from the year as we go through 2019, and then any of the change and challenges that we've got coming up, and obviously if you have any questions, we can talk about that as well. So just real quickly, in 2019, we had 1,441 incidents that occurred in the village of Alloway. 1,030 of those were EMS incidents. Really no surprise there. That's pretty common that's our primary type of response. And I will also ask Ryan, Assistant Chief Ryan Gibbons, if he has anything to jump in as well as we go. So our average arrival time in the village is 5 minutes and 1 second, and that's for both EMS and fire responses, which may seem a little odd, but it really isn't when you think about it, because it's the same units responding from the same place. So it actually is makes a lot of sense, really. You can see the total responses by unit there for engine 481 and med 481, which are the two units in the station in Bellevue. In Alloway, and the total responses for the entire department is 14,098, which is a 5.1% increase over 2018, and that's really about what we expect to see. There is probably going to be a slight dip in 2020 because we did have a little bit of a slowdown, believe it or not, during the first part of COVID. Although it remains to be seen how the final part of COVID in 2020 shapes up here. So we'll let you know that next year. Some of the big changes that took place in 2019, one of the biggest ones was our change in SCBA. And it is a very, very significant change. And it's probably the most single most important piece of protective equipment that we use. Essentially, this is the air tank that determines how long a firefighter can operate in a smoke-filled environment. It's a very, very technical piece of equipment, and all the firefighters have to know every little intricacy of how it works in order to solve a problem if that occurs. And keep in mind that this super technical piece of equipment has to be operated in a high heat, low visibility environment, probably while crawling around with gloves on. So it's a huge, huge undertaking when you completely change the type of SCBA that you're using. It really was a huge advantage to us to switch to the model. We switched from Scott to MSA. Switching to that model allowed us to put a thermal imager in every single firefighter's hands. The pack itself actually has a small thermal imager built right into it. That's the device that essentially allows you to see through smoke. And when I first saw those come out in the fire service, they were huge. I mean, it one person had one, and it was pretty much their whole job just to use it. And now they're down to the point of being about the size of a cell phone, really. And every firefighter can have one in their hand, and that's how we find people who might be trapped in a burning building. So those are hugely important tools, and now they're in everyone's hand, which is incredible, in my opinion. Very ergonomic. They're all the same model now. We had little differences from station to station before, and that's really not something that you want. Moving on to the flood response, we've increased our capability to respond to urban flooding. We all know that over the last many months, there's been quite a bit of urban flooding. We've added some John boats to our fleet, which is really, it's a large flat-bottom aluminum boat. There's no motors on it, but it basically allows us to move through flooded streets and you know, parks and things like that, and get people into the boat and move them out to dry land. You don't want a motor on it necessarily because it gets stuck in a bunch of debris and things like that, but something that we've definitely had a use for lately. We also created what we're calling an ESU, an Emergency Services Unit or Emergency Support Unit. It's a giant Army truck, an Army surplus truck. We were able to secure that through a federal program at no cost to the department and outfit it to help us get into deep water. It has the ability to drive into deeper water and actually go in and get people out, load them into the back of the truck, and get them up to dry land. There's a picture of it later on that I'll kind of point out. It's got many other uses too. And then in 2019, we also finalized our active threat response, which is a response to something. Active threat means someone's actively trying to hurt someone else. You often, you know, hear things like school shootings and workplace shootings and so on. That's what an active threat response is. And we coordinated that training across all fire departments in the county, EMS agencies in the county, and law enforcement agencies in the county. So we now have a common operating guideline across the entire county that everyone has been trained on, and that's a huge step forward to get all those agencies on board. That takes a lot of effort, and it actually consumed a lot of 2019 to get that done. So we'll take a look at the village and kind of some of the things that you see occurring in the village. This is a heat map of where the incidents are occurring in Alloway, and you can see part of Green Bay there too. Those red spots are high volume spots, and those places are Oddfellows, Bishop's Court, Parkside Village, Sunrise Village, McCormick Home, and Green Bay Correctional. Those are pretty typical types of places where we expect to see a higher volume of responses, not really abnormal. Just to kind of give you a comparison, this is 2019's a chart of the top 10 highest volume users in the entire department. And on that chart, you'll see Bishop's Court is on there as the, I believe, the number six user there. But with 91 responses, and you kind of see how that compares across the board to other facilities of the same type and other high-volume users as well. So I'll talk a little bit about the response to COVID-19 moving now into 2020. We provided a significant amount of support to Brown County by staffing several positions in the Brown County Emergency Operations Center. Especially during the early days of COVID-19, which started really, for us, it was March 13th. I remember the day very, very well. And it wasn't just us in Green Bay Fire. It was many of the fire departments in the county, many of the EMS agencies in the county that all supplied some assistance to Brown County. And I just have to say, I've gained a lot of respect and have a lot of faith in our public health people and watching them in this response. There's a tremendous amount of just stuff going on and trying to keep all of that straight, and they're really doing the absolute best that they can and working very hard during this. So between Assistant Chief Gibbons and I, the two of us, from March 13th on, in a 113-day period, the two of us combined had over 1,600 hours of time operating in the Brown County EOC, all just strictly related to COVID. So it was extremely busy, and we were only two of usually about 10 to 12 of our personnel from Green Bay Fire and other fire and EMS personnel as well from around the county. They functioned in the EOC for much of that time, the Emergency Operations Center. Several members of the incident management team were involved in that. That is also firefighters, police officers, anyone, typically public safety staff who volunteer for those spots. We were asked to create multiple test sites at several different employers. So early on, if you recall, there were various industries that had significant outbreaks. We worked with the National Guard and local healthcare providers to set up test sites at those workplaces, and then eventually also established the massive community test sites that you saw at the Resch Center and Casa Alba Melanie in downtown Green Bay. And those sites, there was very little guidance initially on how to set those sites up and how to set up these large drive-through facilities and get a lot of people moving through very quickly. We actually wrote down everything we did. We wrote down our procedures, and we ended up sharing that throughout the state. And we were actually told later, and by we, I mean all of us working together in the EOC, we were told later that the National Guard would travel around the state, and they would find our documents in the hands of the people that they were going to help set up test sites next, and they were following exactly what we had written here. And I just think that's a pretty cool thing when you can help out at that level. There was a ton of logistical support and coordination that had to go into those sites, not only locally with the National Guard, but with the state EOC. Assistant Chief Gibbons actually did all of the logistical work up front for all of that and supported all of it. And I have to say, he did an incredible job, and it's one of the coolest things I ever saw was watching someone with that kind of knowledge make all that stuff happen like it was magic. And he kind of became known statewide for just being the guy that finds stuff. And it was when it was really hard to find. And it was very interesting to see. So we actually handled them on top of that. We also worked from the EOC to deal with all of the PPE distribution, including public safety entities, hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, dental offices, all of that. That was all done through the EOC and with our support, and all of the public information that was going on at that time. And to this day, they're still carrying those functions on. And that's obviously very important. You can imagine, and there's been a lot of changes in that information. It's been very hard to keep up with, but it's a new disease, and we're learning about it as we go. So on our agency, Green Bay Metro Fire, serving the village, what does that mean? Well, there were a lot of restrictions placed on our personnel, including travel restrictions. We wouldn't allow them to leave the area. We canceled their vacations in a lot of cases. And every single call they went on, they had to wear a significantly increased amount of personal protective equipment. And that really took a toll on our people and still does. And we all know, we've all heard the term COVID fatigue. We've all experienced and sacrificed a lot during this time. And I just have to say, I'm extremely proud of our people for how well they've handled it. And I hope you are too. They've continued to provide a tremendous service to the residents and the guests of the Village of Alloway and the City of Green Bay, and my hat's off to them for being able to do that. And a lot of those restrictions are still in place today. I've never been on a fire scene where I had to wear either a surgical mask or an N95 respirator the entire time that I'm there. It's hard enough to breathe through, you know, you're wearing that tank and you do all that stuff, and then usually you get to take that off later, but as soon as you took that off, you had to put a mask on, and all that stuff takes its toll, and it's certainly been challenging, as it has for everyone. So just a couple pictures. This is one of the community meetings that we held, and these are people that were brought in to try and establish how do we set up these test sites and make people of different backgrounds and different communities feel safe and welcome to come here. And so a lot of the people that you see in this picture are informal and formal community leaders that really stepped up to help out. This is at the Neville Museum, which ultimately transitioned into our command post for a little while. And then, of course, you know, pandemic wasn't enough. We had some more stuff to deal with, so the command post started to flood, and we actually had to evacuate the command post in the middle of trying to set up all these test sites. This was probably, you can see the water coming into the parking lot of the museum here, and it was coming up pretty quick. So we started to evacuate and move our command post out to the Brown County Emergency Operations Center. And this is East Shore Drive up along the bay. And some of the, during the evacuation, all of the houses along East Shore flooded. So we had to respond to that at the same time we were evacuating the command post and trying to set up test sites for the pandemic. And you can actually see, I mean, that goes all the way down East Shore Drive that day. And obviously, there was flooding in the village along the East River during some of this as well. So talking about the test sites, this is the inside of the Resch Center where the initial drive-through test site was established, and that truck that's in the forefront there, that's the emergency services unit that I was talking about that allows us to drive into high water. But we also used it to haul all of the supplies around for these test sites and some of the PPE that we were distributing. So very useful vehicle. And then this one is just a picture of the EOC as it was functioning. And you can see on the whiteboard in the one picture, just the schedule every day. That was a list of the meetings that we had to accomplish every single day. And then in the middle there was kind of the statistics for the day. And then next to that was the objectives. What are we trying to plan out? That would be changed and updated every day. And then you could see the room full of people working together. And all the while, we're trying to avoid groups of people. But then we have to go to these places to work. So everyone around the clock, 12, 14, 16-hour days, wearing masks the entire time, hand sanitizer all over the place, you know, all those kinds of things. So it was a very, very, quite honestly, I would say if it wasn't the most stressful time I've ever had in my career, it was really, really close. Certainly the longest duration stressful period. So then, you know, as soon as we got released from the EOC, the George Floyd incident occurred, and civil unrest that resulted from that was pretty unfamiliar and trying for our organization and all other public safety agencies. We were required to operate in ways that we never had before. We're in more PPE. So you had the pandemic going on with that additional PPE, and then we were starting to wear all kinds of equipment to protect us from things like rocks and bottles and things like that, ballistic gear, essentially. So we also had to operate in ways that we had never operated in before. And it oftentimes, you know, despite being considered the helpers, sometimes we were also we were a target of some of the frustration and the anger sometimes as well, including having rocks thrown at our vehicles and so on, and a couple instances of people charging our personnel while they were attempting to render care. And so on. ultimately, you know, the unrest that occurred here was relatively minor when compared to what occurred in other cities, but it was definitely new to us, and it caused us, you know, to have to adjust how we operate. Then the election came along, and we all know that in April, that election, there were concerns about the pandemic and so on, and how the election occurred. And then the general election in November provided some new challenges. We were asked at that point to provide some logistical support in both cases, in April and in November, but also to provide incident management assistance and security planning at all of the polling locations, which was a little bit new to us. We hadn't been involved in that before. While it was a very new role, everything actually went really, really well. And then shortly after that, we moved into rolling into a new CAD system. And ultimately, that's the computer-aided dispatch system that tells us how a 911 call gets processed and how our units get dispatched and so on. That is a huge undertaking in a normal year. And when you try and do it in 2020, it becomes an even bigger undertaking. So that system is now up and running. It's functioning very, very well, and it's a big improvement over what we have. So, and then at that point, early on in March, the Village of Bellevue approached us to provide interim management for their department because their chief was moving on to another department. Eventually, that turned into discussions about the possibility of a merger. And for the next 7 months during, you know, the pandemic and some of the protests and the election issues and all those things going on, we were also working on a merger agreement with the Bellevue Fire Department. As you're probably aware, and we're certainly aware that they talked to you guys about your experience with us Obviously, we don't know exactly what was said due to it being in closed session, but given the fact that they have opted to merge with us as of January 1, I'm assuming it was relatively positive, and we are very much looking forward to that. I truly believe that a merged department that capitalizes on, you know, economies of scale and eliminates duplication of resources and so on is really going to be able to serve the area the best, and that's what we're hoping for. And we'll be talking about this more in just a few weeks at your finance meeting. So that's our wrap-up for the update here. And Ryan, I don't know if you have anything to add. I'm going to stop the screen share here. Hopefully. There we go. So, any questions?
Any questions for System Chief Goplin or Gibbons?
Quite a wild year for you all.
Yes, certainly it was.
I would just say I don't have any questions, but boy, I really appreciate all that effort, and you did a great way of putting it all together for us and other people to appreciate, probably more than we had prior to your presentation. So, job well done. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Thank you.
Matthew?
To echo what Jim just said, just the amount, when you're saying you're in that many meetings, that many hours, you have a small sense of what you're going through, but as you talk through it, it gives us a better sense of everything that you and the rest of the team had to do, so thank you. In terms of the report, I was wondering, I don't know if maybe it was on there and you're just going to tell me that, or if we could get a couple other items. I know you said 5 minutes, 1 second for average EMS arrival time. Is there a breakdown by district?
That actually will be in the report. All of the statistics that we provide will be in the annual report, and I realize there's a problem with how that scan turned out, and we're going to work on getting that to you
okay.
In the next few days here. I apologize for that.
That's fine. I just was curious if we could have that to make sure to see about the various districts And then also, I know that you, on the pages that I saw, there was a breakdown of number of calls by year. Is there something in the report, or could we get something that shows arrival time broken down by year to see how it's trending?
Sure. I think we have that in there already. If we don't, we can look back at it and run a comparison year to year and show you that for sure.
Thank you.
Certainly. And I do just want to comment to respond to some of your earlier comments that, you know, it was very helpful that to have the support that we do have from the communities that we serve and from the elected officials and everyone, really. All the staff across the board was incredibly supportive, so we appreciate that as well.
Great. Chris?
I want to relay a question from a constituent, and it's a fair question, a valid question. And this was right after the publicity for the merger with Bellevue. And the individual who contacted me was employed in Protective Service Fire Department, Volunteer Fire Department in Alloway pre-merger. I don't think he's had a particular axe to grind, but it did come through that he was very loyal to Alloway and wanting to make sure that our service didn't suffer. And basically boiled down, his question was, when the Bellevue announcement was made, it promised Bellevue was going to get better service because of the proximity to that Alloway station. And this guy's question was, at least in the short term, how can you assure him that response times might not suffer in Alloway because that equipment might be now serving an area twice, you know, a greater area? So I'll just throw that topic out there. And how should I answer that?
So the area that we're taking on in Bellevue is being served by all of the fire stations in Green Bay, as is Alloway, so that all of the stations function together. So the entire village of Bellevue, the resources that are in Alloway are not going to be serving the entire village of Bellevue. They'll be serving parts of it, as will the areas in Station 5 and Station 7. Along the northern edge of Bellevue. So it is actually going to be that the workload that Bellevue currently has will actually be divided amongst not only themselves but three other fire stations, and that'll actually decrease the run volume that any one station will have to handle in particular. And essentially, it isn't, we don't just say, well, when Bellevue has a call, this rig from Alloway or this rig from Station 7 must handle it. It goes to the closest available unit. And if that is the unit at Station 5 or it's a unit that might be driving down the road returning from a hospital, they'll actually get that call and they'll be sent there. The other side of that is we monitor those statistics all the time. It's the data that we're talking about in the annual report. And we get reports, we run those reports regularly, we watch those, and we actually have parameters built into the contract with the village of Bellevue that says when these parameters start to occur, you must add more staffing in Bellevue. So those protections are built into the contract. They're built in by design so that exactly what your constituent is concerned about doesn't happen. We don't want that to happen either, and we're watching for that to make sure that it doesn't. And then we've got safeguards built into the contract to take care of that.
Thank you. Good answer.
Any other questions or comments?
I would just like to comment saying, way to be proactive, committed to your service to the community, and we thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
Any others? I just want to ask a question. How did the fire department fare with COVID? Have you had many infections among your members?
We've done quite well, actually. Our personnel have been phenomenal about being safe and being careful and wearing their masks and so on. You know, it was very concerning and still is concerning when you consider that we're in a very small metal box with the patient in the back of an ambulance, and there's very little air exchange back there, but we immediately took steps very early on, and again, kudos to Ryan for procuring, it's an electrostatic disinfectant spray, so it's got an electric charge to it, a static charge that allows it to cling to all the surfaces, the disinfectant will, and we spray them down every day, and anytime we transport a patient that is a suspected COVID patient, we spray them down, and we have had, quite honestly, I don't know the exact number, but I'm going to be, I would safely say it's less than 20 cases altogether across the entire department, and I see Ryan shaking his head yes. So that's less than 10% of our entire workforce, and it's, or I should say approximately 10% of our entire workforce. And it's really been kind of scattered. It didn't all occur at one time, so we've been very fortunate, and that's all credit due to our personnel and how they've been handling.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for all you're doing. It was a little surprising to hear that you were pulled into the security business and logistics business. Logistics, I understand, but security.
Yeah, and really from the security, you know, not physical security necessarily, but the security of making sure that that's certainly a law enforcement function, but from the security of from a COVID perspective, the disinfectant side of things and the spacing and how to do all that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much, both of you. Ryan, thanks for being here. Do you want to say anything? You're spending time with us.
No, well, you just kind of asked about the comment about the logistics part of it. That's part of some of the training that we had, part of the fire department being involved in the state urban search and rescue team. I have a fair amount of background in that. I was a logistics manager there for that team, which I managed about a $2.5 million cache of equipment, but was responsible for taking, you know, 70 some people down the road. We did that once down to the Hurricane Irma up in Florida, where we took that all across the country, and then setting up test sites. And Rob talks about that, but it's really not a big deal. It's the, you know, there's a couple pieces here and there that need to get the right people together, and you can do that. And you know, procuring equipment, you know, once you recognize that early on what you need to go find it. And, you know, don't leave any of those stones unturned. I've had connections around the country that I knew where I could find some of those things. So it was a natural fit for us to be able to help public health. I think Rob and I both learned a ton. We didn't really know a lot about what public health did, but we got a pretty good understanding now, and it's been a great partnership being able to work side by side with them, and just going forward, you know, if there's things that they need or we need together, it's been a real team effort.
Being very helpful, just so you know.
Terry, Rob, what?
He's being very humble with whatever what's available to pull off.
Well. We thank you very much for what you do. Thanks for keeping us safe. Brad has a question.
Actually, Assistant Chief Gibbons is the next agenda item as well. So he won't be leaving us quite yet.
Sounds good.
I should say number 6.
Okay. So, anything else on this? Any other comments, questions? Thank you both very much for being here. Thanks for the presentation. We look forward to the renewed 2019 plan being scanned. Okay, we will move on to agenda item number 5, public comment. Debbie or Carrie, have either of you heard from anyone regarding public comment?
I have not received any.
Okay, thank you. We will then move on to item number 6 under new business. Action regarding ambulance rate increase for 2021, Green Bay Metro. So I'm guessing this is Ryan's show.
Yeah, so we presented to you what we would like to do with the rate increases for ambulance service. Those rates come to us from our billing company, LifeQuest Services, that does all of our billing for us. They're located in Wisconsin and Wautoma. So every year or so, they put together what the survey. They look at what other ambulance services in the area are charging. They base that upon what the Medicare reimbursements are, and then they present us what their suggestions are on what we move the rates to for the future. So that's what you have in front of you to approve those rates. There is a new rate that I want to call your attention to on the first page of that, which is the SCT base rate, which is specialty care transport. That is something that we've not had a rate for that, so we've been unable to charge that rate. And what that rate is if there's something above and beyond the normal services that we provide, it's a higher rate that we can bill at. And one of the examples of that is where, and we've had this happen a few times, is where we transport a patient to the hospital, and then they may need to do an emergency transport from the hospital to a different hospital based upon the care that that patient needs. And there are some drugs that we are not necessarily approved to do that we don't do in our normal operations from day to day. But what we can get is just-in-time training from the ER physician, and they can quickly teach us how to administer some of that. It's just a little bit of technical parts into that. And then we transport those patients, usually on an IV pump, would be usually the normal parts of that, and we transport them to a different facility where they can have that specialty care. It doesn't come up a lot, but it does happen, you know, a few times a year, and this would allow us to charge that rate that we were not able to in the past.
Okay. And for the benefit of the folks who may be listening to this, the new rate for the service, could you just talk to the new rates?
So the, would you like each one of them?
Yeah, if you would.
So the BLS base rate for a resident currently is at $725 and would change to $750. And the non-resident rate is $830, which we would ask to change to $850. And then the advanced life support one rate is currently for residents at $825 and change to $900. Non-residents would be $950, moving to $1,025. Then the ALS 2 rate for residents is currently at $950, moving to $1,155. Non-residents at $1,080 current rate, moving to $1,200. And then the SCT base rate, which I had just discussed, would be for residents would be $1,300 and non-residents $1,425. And then the mileage rates would change from $13 per loaded mile to $16. And then we also have a couple other rates where we provide on-scene care at home, where we do not transport the patient to the hospital. So that BLS on-scene care rate is currently at residents at $350, moving to $375. Non-residents from $450 to $475. And then the ALS care, advanced life support care at home, would be $450 for residents, moving to $475. And non-residents from $550 to $575.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Gibbons? So,
just one quick question. Something that just kind of jumps out at me, and I'm just trying to draw some logic around it, is like when you get to the ALS 2 base rate, a resident goes from $950 to $1,155, which is, what, a $205? Is that right? $50, yeah. Where the non-resident only jumps $20. Where's, or $120. That same if you move up a little bit, where you're going from the ALS 1 rate, $75 increase for residents where it's not proportionate for non-residents. How does that math work on that?
So the ALS-2 for non-residents increases $120 per on that one. It's all based upon the survey that they do based upon other agencies. So those increases, like you said, may not be proportional and to what you said, that it's not just an across-the-board 3% increase. It's based upon the survey that they do to try to be consistent with other agencies.
Okay, thank you.
And that's other agencies throughout what geography?
In the area. So included in that packet was the different ones that they surveyed. So it has Ashwaubenon, De Pere, Kaukauna, Manitowoc, Two Rivers. On that one, they also did for the SCT because not necessarily a lot of people bill for that. So then they reached out to a bigger area, Ashland, Baldwin, Beaver Dam, Chippewa Fire District, Greene County, Town of Lisbon, Manitowoc, Marshfield, Nakusa, Reedburg, United Emergency Medical Response. I honestly do not know which one that is, and then Wausau.
Okay. Matthew?
Chief Gibbons, I completely understand the SCT charge and why we need to create that. I'm a little confused about the increase that is being proposed in that if you look at the rate survey, aside from the mileage, every other instance, what we're charging is already above the average. So we'd be taking, I'd understand if we were at the low end, that would make complete sense. But in each case, again, aside from the mileage, we're currently above the average before an increase. And I know you're going off of, your, I believe you said, the LifeQuest recommendation. I don't know if there's any, we question what they tell us. And also you said Medicare is increasing the amount of reimbursement. I'm not sure if I understand why we'd be increasing if we're already above the average.
So when you look at some of those rate surveys, it can be a little bit confusing because some of those other departments, they actually bill specifically for their items. So if you would go on a call, they will bill you for the Band-Aid, they will bill you for a gauze pad, all of those types of different things. They'll bill you a certain rate for the IV. We don't do that. We bill strictly on a bundle price. So that's where it comes out as just this single flat rate, as opposed to some of the other ones when you look at like the peer, for example, the peer will bill for different specific pieces as they go along. So that's one of the reasons that their rate is lower. One of the things also that I want to mention is that in our payer mix, these rate increases are only going to affect about 22% of our call volume, that those are private and commercial pay. The rest of them, the 68% of our payer mix is either Medicare or Medicaid, where those rates are fixed. And so there's nothing that we can do to increase that particular billing rate.
Okay, that part, that helps fill in a blank a little bit. I was thinking that it applied also to Medicare charges.
No, so Medicare has, they have it here, it's about $400. Don't hold me to exactly, I have it here. For example, on a Medicare, on an ALS-1 call, Medicare will only pay $437 of that if it was a resident of that $900 bill. So each time that we do bill that and we get reimbursed from Medicare, we're only going to get that portion of the bill. We cannot bill the patient for the rest of that part. That's it, and that's we move on. So part of that rate increase is to try to recoup parts of that.
So overall, Chief, are we breaking even on the services we provide? Is there a surplus, or are we losing money on the services we provide?
So we kind of look at it in that the taxpayers and what is part of the levy is the insurance policy, to have that service available, and then we look to bill the individual users for the service. What we bill does not pay for the staffing and all of those things. It helps to offset those capital expenditures, like what we had talked about, like Rob had presented in there. The SCBA purchase, that was about a $1.2 million, I believe, purchase that we did, and that's kind of how we justify the billing part of that, is goes to offset those purchases. So we, from the billing aspect of it, we are not breaking even from the billing aspect for apples to apples.
Okay. Any other questions? Hearing none, I will thank you very much for your time. Thanks for spending your time with us and giving us a rundown on that. We are being asked to for a motion on this item to adjust the rates as presented. Do I have a motion on this item? Trustee Harris.
Move to approve, please.
Seconded by Trustee Genrich.
I have a question. Do they also need to, it says it is also recommended that a lift assist fee, is that part of the discussion? The last line on the memo.
So what is that being, what are we being asked for on that?
So yes, we ran that through city finance. As far as adding that lift assist fee, and that fee would only apply to commercial facilities. What we're starting to find out is that a lot of the facilities are decreasing their staff and they're relying on the fire department to use us to do things that they should be doing. So that's why that lift assist fee is put in there. We need to draft the language and things for that, but we wanted to get the fee schedule in there. Our intent for that is, you know, different nursing home facilities where they should have the equipment there to do that, and what they're doing is they're trying to pass the liability off to the municipal fire department. So this is one way that we're hoping to deter that. Is that we would build a facility directly for those after a certain amount of time. This would not apply to residents in their home. As far as when it gets excessive to people in their residence, we deal with that in a different way, whether we try to reach out to get more help for them, whether it's in the home or if they need to transition into an assisted living facility or things like that. So this would not apply to them.
I just wanted to make sure if that's supposed to be part of the motion.
Okay, so Matthew, you made the motion to approve. Do you want to include a lift assist fee in your proposal or your motion?
For establishing it, yes.
Okay. And Jim, on your second?
I'll concur with the changes.
Okay. Okay, so we have a motion to approve along with the lift assist fee, and a second. Do we have any discussion on this item? So we're approving the rate schedule, but you still have to identify the service, right? For the lift assist and who you're going to charge and how it's going to be charged?
Correct. The specifics of the exact language so that we can provide that to the facility so that they're completely aware of what the parameters are of that needs to be established, but we wanted to get the fee schedule established at this time with all the rest.
Okay, and I would make a request that you provide us with a description of those services. Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. Any further discussion?
Should we add that to the motion, President Rafter?
I'm happy to do that.
Then I will make that modification, please.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve with the condition that we are provided the
a description of the services and who it will impact and who it won't. Jim, are you okay on the second?
Yes.
Okay. We now have a motion to approve and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Did I hear Chief Goblin say aye? Just kidding. Okay. Well, very good. Thank you very much, Chief Gibbons, Chief Goblin, for being with us this evening. We'll let you go about. You're more than welcome to stay and hang around and listen to all the great stuff. Item number 7, action regarding consent agenda. Item A, accept and place on file minutes from the Finance and Personnel Ad Hoc Committee dated 9/28/20. Do I have a motion on the second? Trustee Dart, seconded by...
Approving. Place on file.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item 7B, approval of accounts payable dated 11/13 and 11/20/20. I have a motion on this item.
Move to approve.
Trustee Green. Aye.
Second.
Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 8, future agenda items. Is there anything a village trustee would like to see on an upcoming agenda? Hearing none, we will move on to item number 9. Can I have a motion to convene in the closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 1985-1E, deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public property, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, and Wisconsin Statute 1985-1C, considering employment, promotion, compensation, or performance evaluation data of any public employee over which the governmental body has jurisdiction or exercises responsibility.
So moved.
Trustee Sampson, do I have a second?
Okay.
Trustee Dart, any discussion? Or we have a motion to go into closed session in a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? We'll do roll call. Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
Trustee Sampson.
Aye.
Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Dart.
Aye.
Trustee Green.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. We will go into closed session. Spera, I will...